Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we have a health alert about measles exposure in El Cajon and San Diego. Then, we'll tell you about commencement speakers at Grossmont and Cuyamaca Community Colleges. A fire at a battery storage facility in Otay Mesa has prompted evacuation warnings. Right after, Escondido residents raised concerns about a similar lithium-ion battery storage site proposed in their neighborhood. On Jobs Talk, hear about construction career training at a local high school. Then we'll have news about a double fatality motorcycle accident after the driver fled from police in El Cajon. East County residents were treated to a rare view of the Northern Lights, and we'll have details. A Russian migrant with hopes of freedom in America has been ordered deported. We'll have his story on our show today. On People Power, hear about special deliveries of flowers for new moms at Grossmont Hospital on Mother's Day, thanks to the landscaping crew. On Destination East County, hear about top festivals coming up from Descanso Days to A Taste of Julian. On 2024 Talks, we'll have national news, including results of several Supreme Court cases involving consumer protection and liabilities of protest organizers. An injured mountain lion has been released into the wild thanks to rehabbers at Ramona's Project Wildlife. We'll tell you about the governor's proposed state budget cuts and a proposed bill to require that nursing homes provide families access to patients before the next pandemic strikes. Hear about the world's largest bounce park in El Cajon through June, how El Cajon police are using social media to solve crimes, and an astronaut from La Mesa awarded a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Plus, we'll take you on the road to the historic Old Stone Store in Campo. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Zervon Ali with a health alert about a measles case that may have exposed people in East County and San Diego. The county's public health officials confirmed a third case of measles in our region, this year in a one-year-old infant who recently traveled overseas. The unimmunized baby may have exposed others at two locations. The Children's Primary Care Medical Group in El Cajon, the morning of May 12th, and the Rady's Children's Hospital Emergency Department in San Diego on May 13th from 10:30 to 12:45 p.m. The county previously confirmed two other cases in the region this year. None of the three cases are linked, but are associated with international travel. Before this year, the last confirmed measles case in San Diego County was 5 years ago in 2019. County's epidemiologists are working with Children's Primary Care Medical Group in El Cajon and Rady's Children's Hospital to identify and follow up with patients and staff who may have been exposed. Dr. Willem Wooten, county's public health officer, says measles is a very contagious disease that can spread easily by coughing, sneezing, or being in the same room with an infected person. Anyone who was at Rady's Children's Hospital emergency room on May 3rd or Children's Primary Medical Care Group on San Diego, May 12th, should watch for symptoms and call their healthcare provider if they show any signs of the disease, Dr. Wooten urges. People with symptoms are asked to call their doctor's office in advance so infection control measures can be taken and prevent exposure to others. Measles develops 7 to 21 days after exposure. Early symptoms include fever, cough, runny nose, red eyes, and a distinctive red rash that usually appears 4 days after early symptoms start. A person is considered contagious 4 days before and 4 days after the rash appears. The rash typically begins on the face and head, then proceeds down and outwards towards the hands and feet. It fades in the same order it began, from head to feet. Dr. Wooten says the best way to prevent measles is by getting the measles vaccine. With measles outbreaks occurring in several counties, it is important that all external travelers get vaccinated. Infants between 1 and 6 months of age who travel should get one dose. Travelers who are 12 months of age should get two doses, at least 4 weeks apart. While most adults are fully vaccinated, any adult who's never had two doses of measles should get the vaccine, with rare exceptions such as pregnant women. Death can occur from severe complications of measles, and the risk is higher among young children and adults. There is no treatment for measles. Bed rest, fluids, and fever control are recommended, but people may need treatment for their complications such as pneumonia. Though measles has been nearly eliminated in the U.S. thanks to vaccinations, measles remains a common disease in many areas of the world, including parts of Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. Over the past two decades, measles vaccines have saved countless lives since these vaccines are highly effective. Two doses of the vaccine reduces your chances of getting measles by 97%, but vaccination rates have fallen, and as a result, measles cases are increasing. In 2022, about 83% of the world's children received one dose of the measles vaccine by their first birthday, though routine health services lowered since 2008. Not surprisingly, measles deaths are once again on the rise, with 132,000 deaths worldwide in 2020, the last year recorded according to the World Health Organization.
Over 2,100 students are set to receive over 5,300 degrees from Grossmont and Cuyamaca Colleges. Cuyamaca College will hold its graduation on May 29th, with Grossmont College's commencement ceremony on May 30th. Both will also be live streamed so family members everywhere can watch the celebration of students' academic success. Lynn Nealtz, Chancellor of the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, says, "I'm proud of all of our graduates for putting in the hard work to reach this milestone." She adds, "They received an excellent education at Grossmont and Cuyamaca Colleges, and their lives will be forever transformed by their experiences." Cuyamaca College's student speaker will be 32-year-old Jessica Lourdes Bahena, a Rancho San Diego resident who is earning associate degrees in ethnic studies, history, humanities, fine art, and social and behavioral sciences. The road has been challenging for the single mother of two, but she credits the professionals on campus for lifting her up when she was down and propelling her toward her degrees. She says, "It's been a huge help to receive grants, school supplies, diapers, gas cards, and other aid." She worked part-time at the Cuyamaca Student Affairs Center and recently launched a student group called Brown Students United, bringing students of color together to support common challenges. "I have so much gratitude," Bahena says, "and I want to give back to the school and its students the way I was helped when I was here." She will transfer to San Diego State University to major in history and Chicano studies. She hopes to earn a master's degree and one day return to Cuyamaca College to teach history. Grossmont College will hold its graduation at Viejas Arena for the second year in a row to accommodate the larger number of graduates and family members. The student speaker will be Zachary Mass, who will be earning an associate degree in communication. Mass said he's enjoyed attending Grossmont College with supportive professors and counselors, earning a 3.5 grade point average. Mass says, "All the professors have been really supportive. I email them and they get back to me soon." His academic challenges started in third grade and reached a boiling point when he was in eighth grade and was expelled from middle school. He spent 2 years in a special education school before he was able to return to a mainstream high school, but he's learned to persevere despite adversity. Mass has been active in the radio class and has been an announcer at Grossmont College sports events. He will be transferring to San Diego State University to earn a bachelor's degree in communication and hopes to have a career in sports broadcasting. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danae Ramirez.
A fire at Gateway Energy, a lithium battery storage facility in Otay Mesa, has prompted county officials to issue an evacuation warning for businesses in the surrounding area around midnight Thursday due to potential for release of toxic gases. The fire also resulted in a shelter-in-place order for nearby Donovan State Prison and a road closure at Camino de la Fuente and Paseo de la Fuente. As of our show taping deadline Friday, according to CAL FIRE, firefighters continue to battle the thermal runaway fire involving lithium-ion batteries. Harmful gases are limiting access for firefighters, though the fire is still contained to the building of origin. Hazardous materials teams from the county and city of San Diego are on hand, as well as subject matter experts, multiple firefighting crews, and the sheriff's department. Crews are using special tools to monitor the area for any harmful gases or contaminants. This incident highlights the potential risk of energy storage facilities with hazardous lithium-ion batteries, since such fires can be difficult to extinguish. Such facilities are used to store energy generated by renewable energy projects such as wind and solar, so that power will be available even when the wind isn't blowing or the sun isn't shining. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Zervon Ali with the Green Scene Report. The developer of a proposed battery energy storage system slated to be built just over a quarter of a mile from Polomar Hospital in Escondido held his last a series of three workshops earlier this month at San Marcos Community Center. The workshop aimed to address concerns of local citizens who have organized oppositions to the project by gathering upwards of 27,000 signatures against the project. The batteries are meant to bridge the energy gap between traditional energy sources provided in San Diego Gas and Electric to spike the usage during peak times when historic brownouts or blackouts occur to multiple capacity in order to mitigate capacity issues. But residents nearby say the projects pose health and safety risks. Ashley Robinson Berard, a vocal opponent who has attended all three workshops, says it's a disaster waiting to happen. She says battery energy storage systems are known to cause thermal runaway leading to fires and toxic fumes. With over 40 million battery cells planned for this facility, the potential for disaster is enormous. The developer of the project, AES, says fire and safety precautions are the forefront for the design. The presentation to the community residents in March, AES development manager Max Cornier explained that the new fire prevention codes provide further protection. A new early gas detection system can help operators isolate the system to prevent explosions, he said. The Electric Power Research Institute reports that there have been 72 battery energy storage system fires globally since 2018. This includes the Valley Center TerraGen battery storage fire in April 2022, where a single battery cell approximately the size of a DVD case caught fire. And the fire suppression system worked according to design, as reported by Valley Roadrunner. But not everyone is convinced. In the most recent May workshop, former Sempra Vice President for Project Development, Joseph Raleigh, came out against this project. The former executive of Sempra, which owns SDG&E, asserted, "I have many years of experience in selected sites for projects like this for large cell power projects." But he added, this project, while it does make sense from an electrician interconnection standpoint, it makes no sense at all in regarding the surroundings of the site itself. According to Rowley, the danger is both in the difficulty of putting out battery fires as well as toxic gas that propagate from the fires. There's no way to suppress that type of fire, he says. Thermal runaway battery fires, adding that like rocket fuel fires. Lithium ion batteries fires don't need oxygen to burn. With the proximity of residents and the hospital nearby, toxic gases are also an issue. These are extremely toxic gases that come up with this type of fire. But with fire protection system that developer has processed and the testing required to achieve the necessary certifications, Corinne Bonney says, ASE is confident that a fire would not necessarily spread beyond the facility's wall. Bonney said she knows there's a lot of opposition to the project, and that emotions are running high. Raleigh, the former Sempra executive, warned, regulations have not caught up with this technology. There is no consensus on how best to suppress fires of these types of facilities.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Well,
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
This is Zeravon Ali
and Danita Ramirez
with East County Magazine on KNSJ. On April 11th, 30 students from King Chavez Community High School gained real-world hands-on experience and construction careers.
Apprenticeship Training Career Exploration Day for high school students was presented by Workforce Connect in partnership with King Chavez Community High School and Associated General Contractors.
The event showcased that construction provides a wide variety of well-paid career opportunities, often including on-the-job paid training.
Groups of high school students transitioned through the series of hands-on workshops in a state-of-the-art training facility, which showcased a variety of excellent careers available in construction and related industries.
Experiences included wood and steel stud farming, electrical, heavy-duty equipment simulation, and an introduction to small tools.
We got the chance to speak with many people who made this possible, from the founder of Workforce Connect to high school counselors and some students.
Debbie Barnum, the founder of the three-year-old organization, Workforce Connect, has worked for the nonprofit for over 20 years now. She says the reason she started this program is because she wanted to open inside opportunities into the world of construction to other communities to show that it is a lucrative job and can lead to a stable career.
This program is debt-free because of the opportunity to get paid while you learn. It also exposes students to different career opportunities in the field.
We also had the opportunity to speak with Peter Bartholomew, a counselor from King Chavez High School, who strongly promotes students to explore as many options as possible for their future.
King Chavez High School also sets up many opportunities to showcase many different careers and helps set the students up for success by helping pay for things like driver's licenses, work boots, or any other materials they may need for the job. The students love this experience.
Bartholomew says his favorite part of the day is at the end. As they head back to the campus, he gets to hear all the students' conversations, how much fun they've had, and how much they've learned.
While we were there, we spoke to students about their time at the Associated General Contractor Apprenticeship Training Center. King Chavez student Angelica Osorio says she has learned a lot during her time and says the program is great because it gives those who are less fortunate the opportunity to get scholarships and an internship, which would otherwise be difficult to obtain on their own.
To show what a program like this can do, we spoke to Eduardo Nunez, a project engineer from Helix Electric. Nunez was there to teach the students the different pathways that they can go into while in this career, including fieldwork and higher positions like management.
Workforce Connect hopes to expand to helping more high schools and colleges in the future, and even those who are homeless to help kickstart their career.
For more information, visit Associated General Contractors Apprenticeship and Training website at AGCSD@att.org.
A motorcyclist who fled from El Cajon police on May 11th crashed into two other vehicles and died at the scene, along with his female passenger. Around 11:38 p.m., officers tried to stop the black Harley-Davidson motorcycle for a traffic violation on East Main Street. The motorcyclist fled at a high rate of speed. He crashed into a blue Toyota Tacoma and a black Hyundai Sonata a few blocks away. The motorcyclist and his passenger, both 41 years old, suffered serious injuries and died despite medical treatment by police and fire department personnel. Their names are being withheld pending notification of family, says Lieutenant Darren Forrester. Occupants of the two vehicles that were struck were not injured. The El Cajon Police Department is asking anyone with information regarding this collision to call 619-579-3311. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, made a rare but spectacular appearance over San Diego's East County on May 10th, visible in mountain and rural areas dark enough to see the dramatic night sky. A rare solar storm was the cause, and though the Aurora Borealis wasn't forecasted to be seen in our region, many East County residents were delighted at the unexpected light spectacular. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration issued a G4 severe warning for the geomagnetic storm in places where the northern lights were expected to appear, though no interruptions in telecommunications occurred locally. Locally, many residents shared photos showing dramatic pink skies in areas such as Mount Laguna, Julian, and the Anza-Borrego Desert. Some photographers juxtaposed the northern lights against foreground images such as towering ocotillos and desert dinosaur sculptures. Astronomer Dennis Mamana lined up a spectacular shot of the Aurora Borealis and the Milky Way from his backyard in Borrego Springs, calling the panorama an amazing sky show. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
A young Russian migrant in Hakumba Hot Springs told East County Magazine a few weeks ago that he fled his homeland after being persecuted and beaten for opposing Russia's unjust war of terror in Ukraine. But now his hopes of freedom in America have been dashed. An immigration judge has denied his asylum claim and ordered 19-year-old Amir Muhsin deported, according to his aunt and his attorney. Muhsin was one of several undocumented immigrants in Hakumba who shared their stories of long journeys often filled with danger and uncertainty as they risked their lives to reach America and seek asylum. Muhsin, an ethnic Uzbeki refugee, said he fled political persecution in Lipetsk, an industrial and manufacturing hub south of Moscow. He described how he managed to escape the oppressive political climate in his homeland. Asked the main reason behind him fleeing Russia, he described retribution for his pacifist views. He told East County Magazine, "I didn't agree that Ukrainians should die. People have beaten me on the street. I was attacked." When he asked police to start an investigation, he says they declined. And then, he adds, "I went to a prosecutor and he declined too." He believes the attacks and refusal of authorities to take action were because of his outspoken opposition to the war in Ukraine and because, he says, he witnessed officials taking bribes. Muhsin denies breaking any laws in Russia. "I wasn't even participating in meetings or illegal things," he told our reporter. "I just think war is horrible and people shouldn't die. I've been around Russians and Ukrainians and I feel pity for both people," he explained through interpretation software. The Russian government even tried to boot him out of his university studies, he said, in an effort to forcibly draft him to fight in a conflict which has killed an estimated 500,000 Russian troops and over 120,000 Ukrainians. Muhsin contacted his aunt in New York, who was eager to welcome him. So he flew to Turkey, then Germany, and finally Mexico. While awaiting a visa in Mexico, he says his phone was stolen at gunpoint. Hotel workers told him about traffickers who would pick him up and drive him to the border for $250. From there, he says he walked with others from a small bus past the mountain where he made his way through a gap in the border wall, finally arriving at a migrant camp in the U.S. near Hakumba. Muhsin says he felt afraid. He told our reporter there were guys with guns, and they had silencers, so I thought it was all over. Afterwards, Muhsin was taken in by the U.S. Border Patrol and asked for asylum. After spending 9 days at a detention facility in San Ysidro, he was flown to Indiana before being bused to an Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, facility in Mississippi. Our reporter was able to speak with Muhsin, who said he felt so stressed that he couldn't sleep for 3 days there and forgot some key points when telling his story to an ICE officer. He says, "When I tried to say something, they stopped me and told me to only say yes or no." So when asked if he had ever been a member of a political party in Russia, he said no, but didn't mention that he did work as a secretary at a political party office, though he insists he was never a member. Muhsin told us that while working at the political party's office, "I witnessed bribes, corruption, and when I tried to do something about it, I received threats. The last time I was beaten was a result of my conduct. I had witnessed people in the political parties taking bribes." The party, which translates to New People, is a center-right party in Russia, sympathetic with Vladimir Putin. After his interrogation by the ICE officer, Muhsin was granted a hearing to plead his case for asylum before a federal judge in Mississippi, but the judge ruled that Amir's claim of fleeing political persecution and forced conscription to fight in a war he opposed was not a valid enough reason to be granted political asylum in the United States. Now, the young man who says he spoke out against corruption and oppression faces deportation back to Russia. His aunt in New York told us, "I feel so devastated. I fear for his life over there." She adds that she is afraid her nephew could be imprisoned in Russia or sent to fight in the war in Ukraine that he opposed. Amir Muhsin's attorney, Shahzada Ashraf, confirms that Muhsin will likely be deported to Russia any day now. He says of the young Russian immigrant whose hopes of freedom have been crushed, "He was one of my favorite clients I've ever worked with." It is a tragedy that the judge was not persuaded by his case. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Zervon with the People's Power Report. In honor of Mother's Day, the landscaping team at Sharp Grossmont Hospital in La Mesa gives mom delivering babies their own special delivery of fresh-cut roses. The nurses and landscapers teamed up to deliver more than 30 bouquets. The program called This Bud's For You was initiated by Sharp Grossmont Hospital and landscapers 16 years ago. Since then, each Mother's Day weekend, the landscapers harvest fresh-cut flowers from the hospital's gardens, which they grow and maintain themselves year-round. Then they arrange the bouquets and deliver the flowers to new moms. This Buds For You is an award-winning program. In addition to cheering up patients, the program also heightens the important role all hospital employees play in a patient's care. This program helps landscapers who primarily work outdoors the opportunity to come inside and help brighten a patient's day. The influence of the gardens and plants in the hospital setting are known to be beneficial to both patients and staff. There are more than 200 rose bushes growing around Sharp Grossmont's well-tended gardens, which help promote a healing and calming environment on their campus all year.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Zervon Ali
and Danita Ramirez
with this week's Destination East County. If you're looking for summertime fun, East County has several joyful June events coming up, including Taste of Julian, Descanto Days, Parade and Fair, a Twilight Walk at Mission Trails, a Comedy Night in La Mesa, Santee Summer Concerts, and El Cajon's Outdoor Concerts and Classic Car Shows. First off, we have A Taste of Julian, which will be held on June 1st from 12:30 p.m. to 5 p.m., showing there's a lot more to Julian cuisine than the town's famous apples. Savor the culinary delights that Julian has to offer on this self-guided tour of participating restaurants, as well as wine, beer, cider tasting rooms in the Julian area. The event sells out quickly each year. You can get your tickets at visitjulian.com.
The Descanso Days Parade and Fair will be held on June 1st. Roads close at 8 a.m. and the parade rolls out at 9 a.m., followed by the fair at Descanso's historic town hall from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Descanso's first community fair was held in 1899 under a tent across the street near the creek. You're invited to come join the fun of this rural small town and learn more about Descanso's history while also shopping at vendor booths, enjoying local foods and beverages, and fun for the whole family. Learn more at descansotownhall.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park Guides will lead Summer's Twilight Walk on Sunday, June 15th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Enjoy an evening walk in the park, learn about the changes that occur at dusk as the sun goes down. Walks meet at the parking lot across from Kumeyaay Lake Campground. Don't forget to bring along a flashlight and some extra layers of clothing. It often cools down after the sunset. For more information, visit mtrp.org/event.
Comedians Gene Levin and Carol Johnson are the dynamic duo behind the Fourth Friday Comedy Show, held every month at Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bistro in La Mesa. This delightful event has become one of the longest running free comedy shows in our region, drawing laughter, loving audience from near and far. The next comedy night will be held Friday, June 26th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Spacebar's website is at spacebar.com.
Santee's Summer Concert Series will be held Thursday starting June 13th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at 550 Park Center in Santee. June's performances include Cassie B, Uptown Stream, and Journeyman. Learn more at City of Santee's website.
El Cajon's Concert in the Park series continues each Friday night all summer long from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade. There are also Cajon Classic Cruise Car shows each Wednesday night from 5 to 7:30 p.m. in the same location. You can find a full schedule of each week's themes and entertainers at downtownelcajon.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals,
events,
and attractions
in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And now stay tuned for part two of our show. We'll have some national news headlines from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The CFPB is the cop on the beat for the finances of America's families. And it reminds every lender that if they cheat, there is a serious chance that they could get caught.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren calls the Consumer Federal Protection Bureau the little agency that could, having already forced lenders to return more than $17 million to customers. On Thursday, the Supreme Court rejected a case brought by payday lenders and based on a conservative legal theory which could have undermined the Bureau. The justices, led by conservative Clarence Thomas, ruled 7-2 that the way the agency's funded is constitutional. Meanwhile, the court's turning away a case on the rights of protest organizers in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. Cicely Gay with the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation says that leaves a Fifth Circuit decision in place, allowing protest organizers to be held liable for the actions of protesters.
This case, without question, infringes upon all of our First Amendment rights. It's incumbent upon us to reject its premise and its intention, which is frankly to scare champions of justice and organizers away from mass protest.
The Supreme Court is also saying Louisiana's new congressional map can remain in place for now. A lower court struck the map down as an unconstitutional racial gerrymander, but that ruling is being appealed. The state will likely go into the election with two majority black districts instead of the previous one. A CBS News investigation finds nearly 80 election oversight officials in seven swing states have publicly said the 2020 election was stolen. That worries Nevada Secretary of State Francisco Aguilar.
We are in a national election. That national election is being run at the local level. And at that local level, they can completely shut down the election for the state and for the nation.
The North Carolina Senate has approved legislation to ban anyone from wearing masks in public. Supporters say it will help police crack down on demonstrators using the masks to hide their identities. But state senator and cancer survivor Sidney Batch says the bill puts health and lives at risk.
I should have the freedom, my children should have the freedom, and my husband should have the freedom to wear a mask in order to protect and save my life.
Governor Roy Cooper has not said if he'll sign the bill, but Republicans' legislative supermajority could override any veto. Maryland is the first state to establish a statewide center for gun violence prevention. That's in coordination with a new federal center overseen by Vice President Kamala Harris. Governor Wes Moore says it will treat gun violence as a public health issue.
Gun violence is tearing apart the fabric of our communities. Not just through mass shootings, but through shootings that are happening in each of our communities far too often.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A mountain lion is back in the wild in Central California after spending 2 months at San Diego Humane Society's Ramona Wildlife Center. The adult male was released by California's Department of Fish and Wildlife on May 1st in rural San Luis Obispo County, where he was found suffering from injuries consistent with being hit by a car, including a fractured jaw, broken tooth, and road rash wound. Before released, he was fitted with a GPS collar to monitor his movements. The mountain lion was first brought to the Ramona Wildlife Center by state wildlife officials on March 4th, after he had been triaged at an emergency veterinary clinic in San Luis. San Diego's Humane Society, Project Wildlife team, and an outside dental consultant repaired the jaw injury and other wounds. A month later, they also performed a root canal on the damaged tooth. After making sure the lion was eating and moving well enough to survive in the wild, wildlife officials determined that he was ready to be released. Annie Blue, campus director at San Diego Humane Society's Ramona Wildlife Center, says, "It's a remarkable sight to see this majestic animal return to its rightful place in the wild. On average, there are one or two mountain lions killed by cars on California's highways each week. Vehicle strikes, urban encroachment, rodent poisons, wildfires all contribute to death of mountain lions in California. San Diego's Humane Society Project Wildlife Program is their primary resource to wild animal rehabilitation and conservation education in San Diego County. Each year, this organization gives more than 10,000 injured, orphaned, and sick wild animals a second chance. At the Ramona campus, which they have been operating since 2020, SDHS specializes in caring for native apex predators like birds of prey, including hawks, owls, eagles, coyotes, bears, bobcats, and mountain lions. This is Zaravon Ali reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is John Tidwell with a report from Cal Matters in Sacramento on California's budget. Faced with ongoing weaknesses in state finances, Governor Gavin Newsom has put forward a revised budget plan that he said aims to stabilize California in the longer term by addressing a sizable deficit estimated at $56 billion over the next two fiscal years. Looking beyond the typical annual budget cycle, Newsom proposes more than $30 billion in ongoing and one-time spending cuts, including cuts to education and climate objectives that have been among the governor's own priorities, though he promised that core programs providing social services to needy Californians would be mostly untouched. Newsom said during a press conference, "These are propositions that I've long advanced, many of them. These are things that I've supported." But he adds, "We have to be responsible. We have to be accountable. We have to balance the budget." The governor's proposal is an opening offer to the legislature, which faces a June 15th deadline to pass a balanced budget or forego its pay. That leaves a little more than a month for members to sort through Newsom's solutions and negotiate a compromise that reflects their own concerns amid what is certain to be a fever pitch of lobbying from outside groups hoping to stave off cuts to their preferred programs. The immediate reaction from Democratic leaders in the Assembly and Senate, who will negotiate a deal with the governor, was cautious and addressed few specifics. Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas and Budget Committee Chairperson Jesse Gabriel said in a joint statement, "We are encouraged that the governor's May revision improves budget prospects for future years and saves rainy day reserves." But they added, "They will continue to fight to protect core programs for California's most vulnerable residents and essential classroom funding." Senate Pro Tem Mike McGuire and Budget Committee Chair Scott Wiener said their past budgets have uplifted communities and Californians. This year will be no different. Here are key numbers from Newsom's revised budget for the 2024-25 fiscal year starting January 1st. With tax revenues coming in below expectations, about $7 billion lower than even the governor's January projection, this revised budget proposal is substantially smaller than the $310.8 billion spending plan for the current fiscal year. Including the general fund, special funds, and bonds, Newsom is proposing to spend $288.1 billion on state programs next year, down about 7.3%. $27.6 billion is the remaining deficit that the Newsom administration projects for the upcoming fiscal year. Officials have known since last fall that the fiscal picture was bad, but estimates of just how deep the hole would be varied widely, from a more optimistic $38 billion by Newsom's Department of Finance in January to a dire $73 billion by the nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office. That prompted Newsom and the legislature to take early action last month to reduce the deficit by more than $17 billion ahead of the regular budget process. Their plan included some program cuts, but mostly relied on new revenue, internal borrowing, funding delays, and shifts for savings, earning criticism from Republican lawmakers for being gimmicky. In addition to closing the remaining shortfall for 2024-25, Newsom wants to get a jump start on addressing another projected $28.4 billion deficit in 25-26. Why does California have such a financial problem? The reasons go back 2 years. A downturn in the stock market in 2022 hit capital gains, while high inflation pinched the housing market and the tech industry pulled back on initial public offerings as investments dropped. These blows have continued as wealthy taxpayers carried forward their losses. But the revenue drops were not fully reflected in the spending plan that Newsom and legislators adopted last summer. Severe winter storms prompted the state government to delay the income tax filing deadline for most Californians, giving an incomplete picture during the budget process. So the state committed to funding programs that it subsequently realized it cannot afford. The governor's budget proposal relies on dipping into state reserve accounts, including $12.2 billion from the Rainy Day Fund and $900 million from a safety net reserve spread out over 2 years. Separately, Newsom wants to use $8.4 billion from a school's reserve account next year to stabilize funding for K-12 education that would otherwise drop. Newsom also announced that he will ask the legislature to create another new budget reserve account to help balance California's volatile revenue picture from year to year. Under this plan, the state would set aside projected revenue above historical trends and hold off on spending until it actually materializes. Newsom said, "This is easier than amending the existing rainy day fund to capture more money, which would require approval from the voters." A large part of how Newsom wants to solve California's deficit involves clawing back $19.1 billion in unspent funding promised a few years ago when the state had a record surplus. Substantial cuts to one-time spending include $2 billion for expanded broadband internet, $820 million for healthcare workforce development, more than $700 million for housing development, $555 million for early education facilities, $500 million for water storage, $450 million for behavioral health infrastructure, and $136 million for cleaning up toxic substances in vulnerable communities. Even more painful may be $13.7 billion in proposed cuts to ongoing programs, including shrinking the middle-class scholarship program for college students by $510 million annually and eliminating $300 million for state and local public health programs. Newsom also wants to take an additional 4,600 prison beds out of commission, which could save nearly $81 million per year. The governor proposed an overall reduction of nearly 8% to state operations, which he estimated would save $2.2 billion in 2024 to 25, and more in the years ahead, though exactly how government agencies would absorb those cuts is still to be determined. Newsom is pushing to eliminate 10,000 vacant state government positions on top of that, which could save $763 million annually. These programs, such as supplemental income for elderly and disabled Californians, welfare, and the earned income tax credit will be untouched, Newsom emphasized. That includes the recent expansion of health coverage to low-income, undocumented immigrants of all ages. Other programs will, for now, merely be delayed. The governor proposed to pause an expansion of tens of thousands of subsidized child care slots until fiscal conditions improve. Newsom reiterated that he will not rely on tax hikes to close California's budget gap, despite calls from many liberal lawmakers and interest groups. "No, I'm not prepared to increase taxes," the governor said. But he added, "Should we reform the tax system? The answer is yes. How we do that is a more difficult and challenging conversation."
There are 250,000 California residents in long-term nursing homes. Their health and safety are at possible future risk, say a wide range of experts. Unless we learn from the tough lessons of the pandemic, those lessons are detailed in depth in a taxpayer-funded report released last fall that found the COVID-19 pandemic had a devastating impact, not just on residents, but their families. The report, California Long-Term Care Facility Access Policy Workgroup, is critical of decisions made by state health officials to lock down residents in nursing homes. The findings form the basis of proposed legislation, Assembly Bill 2075, by San Diego Assemblyman David Alvarez. The bill is now working its way through assembly committees in Sacramento. It's already cleared both the Health and the Aging and Long-Term Care Committees and is now awaiting action by the Appropriations Committee. It faces some of the same hurdles which in 2022 stopped a similar effort. Alvarez believes his bill addresses problems detailed in the report. He says, "We have learned many valuable lessons during the pandemic and since the pandemic. Halting visitation rights for our loved ones in long-term care facilities has a major impact on their mental health and their physical well-being. The solution, Alvarez believes, is the right to in-person, on-site access to visitors during the public health emergency, as long as they follow the same safety protocols that are outlined by public health officials and required by staff. His legislation would go into effect with the declaration of any health emergency by state or local officials. The bill analysis notes that during COVID, residents suffered incalculable loss due to prolonged visitation restrictions that separated residents from their families, friends, and essential support persons. Dr. Cameron Kaiser, San Diego County's Deputy Public Health Officer, counters that the bill as proposed is a mistake. At a hearing, he represented the Health Officers Association of California. He testified, "Maintaining visitation, social connections for our most vulnerable is extremely important," but added that creating a law for guaranteeing access has unintended consequences because we didn't know what the next pandemic will potentially bring. Also opposing the legislation is Betsy Armstrong, Senior Policy Analyst for the County Health Executives Association of California. She says the bill mandating visitation rights doesn't require square with current public health guidance and measures. It's not the way access to nursing home facilities should be handled, she says. Tony Chicotel, attorney for California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, believes visitors can be trained to mask up appropriately. The bill has a provision that would allow access for chosen support providers who aren't paid by the facility so long as they follow the same safety protocols that are required of the staff. Kaiser says it's not workable because staff is regulated by state agencies and is trained in the use of personal protective equipment in a way that the public generally is not. 2 years ago, Assemblymember Adrian Nazarian introduced similar legislation, arguing the visitation lockouts were increasingly ineffectual, cruel, and ultimately hurt residents more. But his bill failed to get enough support. A similar effort in Texas to create a right of access during public health emergencies was approved as a ballot measure in 2021. It passed overwhelmingly with 88% approval by the voters. County Health Executives Association of California sponsored the failed California bill 2 years ago. Chicotel says the visitation restrictions during COVID ended up being a heavy emotional burden for many people, such as Rosie Montiel, who spent evenings and nights with her sister Lily, but that all ended with the pandemic-driven shutdowns. She was forced to stand outside her sister's room and try to communicate through a window. Lily had Down syndrome and also suffered severe feelings of isolation, increasing cases of malnutrition and depression, according to the study. In addition, soon after leaving the nursing facility, a hospital doctor found she had a dislocated shoulder that had occurred during the shutdown. The long-term care facility report confirms that public health departments didn't understand that staff were more dangerous than visitors because the staff went from resident to resident throughout the day. A caregiver brought COVID into the nursing home where Denise Brogan's 96-year-old mother, Gabrielle, resided, and the disease killed her, but not before she suffered the effects of isolation. Gabrielle had generally been very positive and upbeat, Brogan said, but then became very withdrawn when visits were restricted due to COVID. Another patient, Mary, suffered a broken back in a fall that landed her in a nursing home during COVID. She also had Alzheimer's and couldn't remember that she could no longer walk. With families barred from visiting and the nursing home short-staffed, Mary suffered repeated falls and injuries. Ironically, Mary's facility refused to allow family members who were fully vaccinated to visit, but eventually agreed to allow family to hire a private, licensed caregiver who did not have to be vaccinated. Lynn Derrick's mother, Petey, also had Alzheimer's. "She couldn't remember about the pandemic," Derrick says. "She thought I had forgotten about her." While Petey has died, Dedrick hopes something good can come out of this difficult time. "I don't want anyone else to go through what we did, and I think that anyone who's been in a similar situation gets it," she says. Asked if she would have been able to follow safety rules if given the chance, Dedrick was quick to reply, "I feel like any of us, if we were a designated spokesperson visitor, we can follow the protocol just as well as a CNA or a nurse or a dietitian." For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
The world's largest bounce park is in El Cajon's Parkway Plaza parking lot through the end of June. It's called Fun Box, and it includes 25,000 square feet of inflatable fun, including 10 play zones, such as the Tumble Temple, Marshmallow Mountain, Gumball's Gallop, and an obstacle course. Fun Box is loved by the likes of Kevin Hart, the Kardashians, and more, according to event organizers. Better yet, Fun Box is committed to giving back to the community, benefiting local foster youths around the San Diego area. Funbox offers 80-minute jump sessions on Fridays from 2:30 to 7 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays from 11:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. For all the fun details, you can visit funbox.com/elcajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
El Cajon's police department is using social media to catch thieves, and the innovative approach is working, helping to swiftly identify and apprehend suspects in retail thefts. Police Chief Mike Moulton says, "We are harnessing the power of social media to disseminate information. In a matter of minutes, we are able to provide images and descriptions of thieves. Our community has responded by assisting our efforts and giving information that leads to arrests." He adds, "Our community members are fed up with thieves who target our community. Social media helps empower the public to partner with police to solve crimes. Information shared on social media platforms has led to the identification and apprehension of suspects within a short time frame. As a result, nearly all of the cases featured on social media have been closed. On one particularly successful day, El Cajon Police Department says it identified 4 suspects in under 24 hours thanks to social media. In another instance, a father brought his own 2 sons to the police department after learning they were featured on social media stealing from a store." Chief Moulton concludes, "We are sending a message to would-be criminals that we will identify them and we will find them." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
President Joe Biden has presented the Medal of Freedom to Ellen Ochoa of La Mesa, the first Hispanic female astronaut and second woman to serve as a director of NASA's Johnson Space Center. She retired in 2018 after 30 years with the agency. A granddaughter of Mexican immigrants, Ochoa lived up to their dreams that anything is possible in America, Biden said, adding, "A beloved trailblazer and mentor, Dr. Ochoa continues to inspire people around the world to reach for the stars and achieve their dreams." Ochoa said she is grateful for the amazing honor and thanked her NASA colleagues, according to NASA's website. Ochoa attended Parkway Middle School and graduated from Grossmont College in 1975. She received a Bachelor of Science degree in physics from San Diego State University, as well as a Master of Science degree and a doctorate in electrical engineering from Stanford University. The first in her family to go to college, she became a groundbreaking aeronautical engineer, inventor, and astronaut on her way to becoming the first Hispanic woman to travel to space, logging 4 trips into space in nearly 1,000 hours in orbit. She has won many honors, including the Exceptional Service Medal, Outstanding Leadership Medal, the Harvard Foundation Science Award, Women in Aerospace Outstanding Achievement Award, and the Hispanic Heritage Leadership Award. She's been inducted into California Hall of Fame and has 6 schools named after her. The Presidential Medal of Freedom was established 61 years ago by President John F. Kennedy to recognize any person who has made an especially meritorious contribution to the security of national interests of the United States or world peace, cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people, and so they were shooting dead blank range around, and both Gaskell Brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them, so they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.